Welcome to La Liga Weekly and congratulations to Barcelona champions 22-23. They have, as we say now, realised an important feature of the project. I might put that on a t-shirt. They clinched the title at local rivals Espanyol, who'd been tricked into thinking it was a testimonial match and only cottoned on to what was happening with 20 minutes to play. Afterwards, we learned that the celebration police now have a special forces division that will come and throw chairs at you and skip around the centre circle of your rival's pitch like a class of primary school children. Yeah. The only damage done was that La Liga TV had to delay hearing from Gary Lineker. For what he gets paid, I want him in full riot gear and body cap. We will try to give Barcelona proper credit, appreciate what they've done before we roll on to next season, spend a lot of time dissecting Atleti and Real Madrid's shortcomings. Respect as well to one of the greats who's stepping away from the limelight after a brilliant career in which he redefined the role that he plays. Yes, Antonio Mateo Lajos was given a guard of honour at Osasuna. A guard of honour, seriously, for a referee.
What was that about?
And good God, he milked it as well. Honestly, if you're a referee, two things. One, facilitate the game to the best of your ability. Two, go home. I promise we will spend more time talking about Sergio Busquets. On Saturday night, you had a choice between the Eurovision Song Contest and Real Madrid against Getafe. I opted to watch a Belgian bloke prancing around in an ill-fitting costume. Yes, the lesser-spotted Eden Hazard made a rare start. Mariano Diaz didn't, and is beginning to suspect, you know, that he might not be crucial to Real Madrid's future plans, but he's going to give it another couple of seasons, just to make sure. Atleti finally binned off their theoretical title chances with a defeat at Elche, just when we were all beginning to believe all that nonsense was behind them. It was too late to be of any use to Elche, but elsewhere in the relegation battle, Valencia got a crucial win at Celta Vigo. While the referee's half-time whistle denied Valladolid a crucial goal, proof that you can be both technically correct under the laws and a prick at the same time. It's a bit rude, but, you know. I mean, he was right. You can blow the half-time whistle gets blown when the time is up and the referee can blow it whenever he wants to. But honestly, mate. Give yourself a second.
Oh, yeah. I mean, did you see his reaction, though? It was, oh, no, what have I done? Yeah, it was straight away. He thought he was in a safe area where he could blow the whistle and it wouldn't be anything. And he's almost got his back to it when the ball goes in, doesn't it?
It's almost...
He's looking at the halfway line.
Grace, isn't it, that he obviously has switched off, hasn't he, and turned away.
Yeah.
My thought on it, because I very occasionally get roped into refereeing, and I blew... The ball went out for a corner and I blew the half-time whistle. And the team said, we're allowed the corner. And no, you're not, the time's up.
Yeah.
It was already slightly over time. You know, it was already like 30 seconds over, but I didn't want to blow the whistle, funnily enough, when they were shooting. You know, technically you should. And then I was thinking, the trouble with giving the corner is that the corner can go on for ages. Because it can bounce around the penalty area for ages. And you look at your watch thinking, I'm way over time now. This is now cheating the defending team. So he should have blown his whistle. If time was up, he should have blown it at the corner before the corner was taken. Not do a Clive Thomas in the World Cup, the worst bit of refereeing it ever. In 1978 World Cup where it blows as it's going into the goal. and understandably furious. Anyway, it's a minor thing, Terry, compared to Barcelona winning the title. And as I said, what I would like to do is give Barcelona some credit before, because the danger is that that in life as well as in football, that you roll on to the next bit before you've appreciated what you've done sometimes. And what they've done to turn that club around from the financial mess they were in, Xavi coming in, a relatively inexperienced coach, patching a team together. Oh, okay, they spent a lot of money, but it was a job of work to be done, wasn't it, to patch that team together. All of that, and to win the league comfortably, before we roll on to what else is wrong and what the future brings and all of this, we should appreciate that, I think.
100%. I couldn't agree more. And I was working last night, so when I got back, I caught up with the stuff that had been on La Liga TV. I forgot they were ninth when he took over. And we were talking about a Barcelona team that were going to struggle to finish last season in the top four. It was a genuine doubt. That's why he was brought in. That was his brief to begin with. And he got them into second. And then now you look at it, they cobbled together some January signings for him last season, didn't they? The likes of Aubameyang and one or two others, Adama Traore on loan. So they got to second, 13 points behind Real Madrid, and it was seen to be a success. Then, of course, we had all the drama in the summer with the new players coming in and other players leaving the club. A lot of work had to be done. And I've always applauded them for doing something, because otherwise they were just going to drift along. And the longer that went on, the further and further they would get behind Real Madrid and Atletico Madrid. And even at that stage last season, you're thinking even Sevilla. So they had to do something. They had to be, you know, progressive, ambitious, be busy, be active. And they did that. And in doing that, they get the state, the crowds are back. New Camp is full up for most games. So you're looking at 80,000, 90,000 people as opposed to 50s and 45s, which they were getting in some games. So that needed to be done. And in this season, to turn around the 13-point deficit that they had on Real Madrid last season, to now be 14 points clear, a 27-point swing is astonishing. And we can, as you said, we can look at the failings of Real Madrid and Atletico in La Liga, but we shouldn't. We just should just be focusing this particular podcast on what a fine job that they've done in a different way. It's not the Barcelona of old. It's not the Barcelona that score over 100 goals. They've found and plotted a way through the season Xavi has, which has suited his players, his team, him. And they've, you know, come up to get to between them. They've come up with a formula that's hard to score against. Players have, the new players in particular, have improved as the season has gone on. Not all of them. Some have. Some have been a success. Some haven't been a massive success. Some are falling by the way, by the passing by, and probably will be moved on. But it was, you know, it's the evolution of Xavi's time as coach at Barcelona, from taking over a group of players and then some new players coming in and then another group of new players coming in to be this successful domestically, which is what we're talking about in La Liga. It's a hell of an achievement from him and from his players and from the club in general. So Barcelona to win another league title. We'll go into the numbers pretty soon, I would imagine, when we talk about Busquets. But for a lot of that team last night, that was their first title win. And one or two, surprisingly, it was their first ever title win. I thought Christensen had won a league title at Chelsea, but he hadn't. So, you know, you're looking at Lewandowski, it's the opposite end of the spectrum. That's nine on the trot now. Eight on the spin with Bayern.
Yeah.
Another one for Barcelona. He's going to be Pichichi. And we've been criticising him at times. Of course, it's the first title for the likes of Pedri and Gavi and Frankie de Jong. So it's a massive achievement. I, you know, wholeheartedly, you know, congratulate Barcelona. To win La Liga, you have to finish above Real Madrid and Atletico Madrid now. And they've done that, and they deserve all the credit in the world. We can look deeper at their failings in Europe and what's going to happen in the future. But at this moment in time, I agree with you totally. You know, to have won La Liga at a canter, with four games to go, and it's a fantastic achievement for Barcelona.
And we'll you know, we've got plenty of time the whole summer. We'll talk about where Real Madrid went wrong, where Atleti went wrong, and all of that. And of course, we have, as we've been going along. You know, this is not a shock win in the end, is it, for Barcelona? The game itself, actually, I thought they played really well. Obviously, I mean, I was only half joking about someone telling Espanyol it was a testimonial, because I thought their performance for a team in a relegation battle in a local derby, I thought they were bizarrely passive. But this is, you know, winning 4-2 away to Espanyol is sort of what people expect of Barcelona, which has not really been the story of their season, is it? You know, it's been the solidity, the grinding it out at times, the 1-0s and all of that is the more accurately the story. But they did turn on some style, didn't they? Balde, I thought, was tremendous. Obviously, Lewandowski got a couple of goals. And so they played really well, and Espanyol played really poorly.
Yeah, it was a lot easier than I imagined, I have to be honest, because Barcelona haven't shown that sort of form that we saw them race into a 3-goal lead by half time. We haven't seen that too often. They struggled in the last game to win at home to Osasuna, who had left out most of their stars because of the Copa del Rey final, and they'd laboured to a 1-0, late 1-0 win in that match. And you thought anxiety was creeping into their performances because they were anxious to get the league title done. But in this game, they were super, but they were helped. I mean, I looked at all aspects of Espanyol's play. They didn't liven up till the game was lost. Tactically, they were all over the place. Defensively, it looked like a back five that had never played together, which isn't the case. They have. But there was always one player dropping in and playing everyone on side, and there was no resistance to the player crossing the ball. And then when the ball was crossed, they had no answer to, you know, whoever it was. You know, Balde with one goal from across, Lewandowski with a couple. It was awful. And then the constant changing after that left you thinking, this doesn't appear to be a great choice of change of coach, to be honest. That becomes a problem for the players then, when you're going into four games to go of the season and the plan, no plan is working, and the plans keep changing. So it's a real issue for Espanyol. But it's all well and good having all the numbers back, which they did, and no one was doing anything.
Yeah. That's the danger sometimes, isn't it, with defending deep, is everyone goes too passive, don't they?
Yeah, and everyone thinks someone else... Everyone marks a space,
yeah,
and they think that's enough, and they think the people ahead of them are going to start closing down. It started in the first minute. So Stegen came out of his box, 20 yards, and he was playing alongside, in between Araujo and Christensen. He had possession of the ball and he tried to find the pass. And I joked that that's something different. We've not seen him. He literally was the third central defender, unopposed. No one went and closed him down. And that's the point you're making about the passive attitude of a team in a relegation battle against your City rivals. There was no aggression. There was no competitive element to Espanyol's play. They were abysmal. And I guess the only thing it was... I didn't find it irritating, but Ter Stegen would find it irritating. And Xavi would, despite winning the league last night, and that was the overriding emotion, I bet Ter Stegen is still cheesed off that his team went all over the place.
Furious, wasn't it? Yeah.
Conceded two goals. And I don't blame him. That's the standard set.
Yeah.
It appeared to all go pear-shaped when Jordi Alba came on, and him and Balde were swapping full-back positions. Koundé went into centre-half, kind of forgot he was playing centre-half and went on a couple of overlaps, and there was no one at back. And then Christensen went off. It looked like Araujo and Christensen went off injured. And it just looked an absolute shambles at that stage. And Espanyol, dare I say it, weren't far away from a comeback. It was, they had, you know, there was a couple of offsides that were close. There was a couple of saves to Stegen made. They ended up scoring two goals. And it kind of glossed over Espanyol's, that was a 4-0, that performance. That they didn't deserve even to score.
Yeah.
And they're in really, really big trouble.
And you know, Barca, for the last 10 minutes, played like they played in the Champions League. And they, Bayern Munich and Inter, didn't they? Yeah.
Certainly exactly,
the shambles. The word project, I took the mick out of it. In Xavi said it in his post match interview with Jamie Easton. He used an interesting word, slight mistranslation, because he said the project. I think he said the project understands trophies, I don't know if someone who can speak Spanish and English properly would be able to explain this to you. So I suspect what he's done. It's not a bad word. That it's not just needs. It's the project has to be understood within the context of winning trophies, or that it's crucial. In other words, they could have, when the financial when they hit the buffers with the finances because of the mess of the previous regime, the decision making, the contracts, etc., they could have just basically patched a squad together with young kids, with free transfers, and, you know, trying to get into the top four, but etc. But Laporta was very brave, wasn't he? Gambled. You and I were both surprised by the amount of money they were paying for players like Rafinha and Ferran Torres, etc. And, you know, getting Lewandowski on big money, all of this. That you have to also, once you've taken those gambles, you then have to start winning. And then winning will then guarantee that the revenue will come in. So in a sense, they've... like a sort of a borrow and spend government, they've taken a gamble, haven't they, on it paying off, as opposed to just thinking, oh, we'll just slightly miserably cut our cloth for 5-10 years.
Yeah, massive. It was a massive gamble. It was brave. We are yet to see the full impact of it, other than what we've seen so far is a really good season in La Liga from Barcelona, and they win a trophy. How much of an extra revenue that brings in as Spanish champions, I'm not so sure. It probably does. And I do expect this summer. Xavi can sort out what he wants to keep now, even though they signed lots of new players. He can sort out who he wants to keep. Busquets is leaving, so that gets off the wage bill. There's talk of Jordi Alba moving on as well, so that gets him off the wage bill, and they can trim it before they then replenish it with other players. And I think the big plan this time is for Messi to return. So it's there's going to be plenty of action, and there might be one or two surprises from Barcelona, but they've got to decide. You know, they can't keep everyone and then add more players and bring Messi back. And they've worked the transfer market skillfully. That some of the free transfers, Christensen and Kessié in particular, are huge successes.
Yeah,
you know, in terms of they might not be able to keep Xavi, might not be able to keep everyone he wants to keep, but I think he's wise enough to understand that. So if people do come in with offers for certain players, there are untouchables. I'm pretty sure of that. The younger players, they won't be sold. But there are some of the others where you think, if the right offer comes along or an offer has come in unexpectedly. But then the other problem is that we had with Frankie de Jong last season where he just refused to leave. So that might happen again with one or two players that they get good offers for that, you know, that player turns around and says, no, actually, I'm enjoying it here. You know, I've always wanted to play for a club like this and I don't want to leave. So there's a lot of work to do. But it's been a huge success. The quick fire plan, the short term plan, has paid off. Let's wait and see how it impacts the club over a longer period of time.
Yeah, because sometimes you need a short term plan, don't you, for the long term plan to realise. Otherwise, it can just be a slightly miserable long term wait where overall the reputation of the club diminishes. People all do actually want an attacking Barcelona as well, which is another thing that you know. They didn't build this worldwide following on 1-0s, did they? They built it on glittering football.
People want to be associated with success, don't they?
Yeah, yeah.
So second, third, fourth, finishing top four, that isn't success for Barcelona. It's 3 years since they won the league and they didn't win anything last season. And the club was a shambles. You know, Laporte had a big mess to clear up after Bartomeu. Huge mess. And I think I've always applauded the fact they've been active, been busy, and they've done something to turn it around the dynamic really quick. And in the short term, it's paid off. And as I say, I'm not holding any judgment of predictions about the future, but the quick fire plan has been excellent.
Right, question. And I'm asking Terry Gibson, director of football, this question. Terry Gibson fan, Terry Gibson commentator, easy decision. Do you want Messi back at Barcelona?
Yes.
Right, yeah.
Yes, I do. My only reservation is the fact that he's not going to be at the camp now.
Yeah.
So you're getting half the support. So then does that affect it commercially? Is it viable? Probably isn't viable anyway. But I don't know, it probably is. I think it's the last dance, if we call it, the Michael Jordan reference. For Messi to come back to Barcelona will bring huge revenue in. And I think he's a player that I actually genuinely think still he's a player they need. I think to make that link between the solid defensive unit. And it's a solid defensive unit because of their ability and most importantly, pace. And then they're supplemented by the younger, fitter, quicker, enthusiastic midfielders ahead of them. And I include Frankie de Jong in that. You know, it's not Busquets and it's not Rakitic and it's, you know, this is now a more dynamic Barcelona. So I genuinely believe, and Lewandowski's still got plenty left in the tank and he's still sharp and he still works hard. And I think there is room for Messi to come in, to be that creative spark that will breed success at the club, bring what he has always brought to the club. The younger players like Gavi, Balde and Pedri will absolutely love playing alongside Messi. It'd be good for their future careers and their development. So no, I really do genuinely, it's not sentiment. It's if I didn't think it was a good idea, I would say so. But I genuinely think that maybe there's a little bit of sentimentality in the fact that he disappeared from Barcelona during COVID in an empty stadium. But I don't genuinely think if it can be done. And it has to be realistic. They can't pay him the money that he might get from playing in Saudi, which is just astonishing. But how much money does one person need? I mean, it's Messi's going to earn millions and millions and millions for the rest of his life, every year of his life after retirement. He's earned millions and millions and millions of money during every season of his playing career. So, you know, you have to weigh up the balance it up with how much do we as a family need against what are my, you know, football wishes, football dreams.
It's interesting now, isn't it? Because there's always the balance to be struck between what you personally earn and how much the club can then strengthen the rest of the team. And at least one of the small advantages of La Liga's financial fair play, at least you can almost show the guy the budget now. You can say, listen, we can give you not what you're getting, would have got in Saudi, but we can give you this amount. But what that would mean is that we're going to sell Frank Kessié. So if you want, you want a really strong central midfield player in there, fine, but he's got to go and we'll get a kid out of the academy and he'll play instead or, you know, a cheaper option. So you can push that dilemma back at the player, can't you? And say, listen, if you want this money, this is going to hurt us.
Yeah, the American, Tom Brady won all those Super Bowls because he was one of the lower paid superstar quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Because he was quite happy to have less money, but that allowed them to spend more on other players.
Yeah.
Which made them more successful, which meant that he won more Super Bowls, which ultimately means for the rest of his life, he's going to be known as the GOAT. And we'll earn money just by being Tom Brady forever.
Yeah.
It's similar. It's along similar lines to that. I think the other basketball players have done it where three of them superstars have all gone to one team. They've all cut their money so they can all play together and win championships.
Yeah.
So there is an element of that. And I agree with you. They can show Messi, this is the best we can do. This is the best we're allowed to do. And this will happen if you join. Mm. Are you happy with that? You know, and it is. I think it is something that particularly clubs in Spain can use. And I think it depends on what Messi and his family want to do. I mean, it's been okay at PSG, but it's not him and his family living in Barcelona. It's not him playing for their club, the only club he's ever played for. So, you know, he's like any other human being. You get used to your life and your home comforts, his family, his kids, his wife, you know, perhaps they're all yearning to come back to Barcelona to spend their lives. And if it cost him a few quid less, he earns a few quid less than he did elsewhere, then, yeah, you have to
struggle by.
Weigh it all up. I dread to. I can't even begin to imagine how much his personal wealth is now and what it's going to be. And do you need another? I know it's easy for us to say, was it 350 million they're going to pay him? Ridiculous.
He'll still get that in the future anyway. He can go to say, you know, Ronaldo went there at 37, didn't he? So,
yeah.
That's still there, isn't it, for the future, isn't it?
You can play the 1 year, 1 year at the end when you're not up to European standards.
Yeah.
And go and play that 1 year and do a farewell, you know, tour and earn 200 million.
Yeah.
So it's always going to be there. Absolutely ludicrous.
On that subject of people who maybe aren't quite up to it anymore, but have been great, Busquets. So you've been a long-term advocate of Busquets and what he brings, Terry. So he's leaving Barcelona in a couple of weeks' time. First of all, just I know we've discussed it before. Tell us why you appreciate him so much.
Thankfully, I was allowed to do some video analysis at Sky on a few occasions on Busquets, and because he's a player that kind of needed explaining. Because he's not Messi and he wasn't Xavi and he wasn't Iniesta. And so it needed people, you know, perhaps needed confirmation of why people were raving about him. You know, it was in the Pep's team, came through with Pep from the B team. I didn't realise till yesterday he didn't join La Masia until he was about 15, 16. He'd been at other youth clubs before then. So it's not like he was a young child that came all the way through. And then he played the season with Pep in the B team. Pep brought him into the first team. And from then on, I noticed yesterday, 41 games in the season. That was his first season. He's probably sharing it with Yaya Toure. 41, that's the lowest total of games he's played in his entire career at Barcelona. So it's durability as well as on top of all the other attributes that I'm going to talk about. But when I was doing that analysis, I was genuinely surprised that I was witnessing a player that knew two or three passes ahead when his team had the ball, what was going to happen, and when the opposition had the ball. So I did some analysis on him, and it was one of the games was against Athletic Club, and they were hitting long diagonal passes, and they were playing around a little bit at the back, then hitting long diagonal passes to the wings. And I was watching Busquets, watching the build-up, and then putting himself into a position to anticipate and intercept a pass that was two or three passes down the line. And it wasn't just once, it was every time Athletic were doing this. And I thought, so this guy is now recognising they're going to go there, 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 then there, and it's going to end up there, and that's where I'm going to be. And he kept doing it. Mm-hmm. And you know, when you see his team in possession of the ball, he's thinking, when he gets the ball, he's thinking, what is the next player going to do? Good players do that. Not all players do that. Good players think the appreciation of the teammate I'm passing to, what is he going to be able to do with the ball? Mm-hmm. Busquets thought of the next pass and the pass after that. So Busquets is a player that looks at, let's use Xavi in yesterday and think, I'm going to put it into Xavi's feet there. I know that he's going to then be able to pass it to him, and he's probably the obvious pass is there. So it was always picking the right passes. And then we come on to his defensive attributes. He can put his foot in. He's not a physically intimidating player, but in terms of physical challenges, he can be competitive, be aggressive. He's courageous in terms of when he first started out, nobody else was playing the goal kicks across the six-yard box from Victor Valdes to the two centre-backs. At that time, we were all going, they're practically playing it across the byline. And then it would go into a young Sergio Busquets who was inexperienced, and it would be easy, would have been easy for him to hide for fear of making mistakes in front of 80, 90,000 people. A young player who we hadn't heard too much of, a little bit of a surprise when he was playing on a regular basis. But no, he had the courage to go into positions to receive the ball. And then his younger days in particular, we then saw him manoeuvre himself out of really dangerous positions and then look to progress with the ball to Xavi, Iniesta, Messi, whoever else was playing, you know, Samuel Eto'o. It was, and then he knew what they were going to do with the ball as well. So he's an astonishing footballer. I'm a massive fan. He's redefined that position because that position was the Makélélé role because it was a destroyer. I'm sure other players have done it in the past, but nobody had done it into the extent of Busquets dropping in between the centre-backs and being a sweeper, bringing the ball out the back, you know, with anticipation of the opposition, what they were going to be doing, the intelligence of his passing range, and his passing range is good. Yeah. You know, it's not always about the 10-yard pass to moving it on to Xavi Iniesta. He was incisive with his passing too. So and the Busquets, you get a position named after you. That tells you everything. It's the Busquets role. And there's not many can do it. Frankie de Jong was earmarked as the Busquets role. No, he's not. He's a different player. But he's not going to be doing the Busquets role. Mm. So he's going to be a big miss. But it might take other players to fulfil other roles in the team for Barcelona to plug that gap. So it's the Xavi Iniesta took the eye. They got the highlights packages. But they couldn't have done it without Busquets. And that goes for the national team as well. His list of trophies are just ridiculous. That's 9 titles now in 15 seasons. And that's in a league with Real Madrid and Atletico. So he's won 9 in that time. Real Madrid won 4 and Atleti have won 2. So it's been an astonishing career. I'm interested to see what he's going to do now. Mm-hmm. And he is at the age where I think it's the right time to do it with Barcelona. And he's going out on a high as a league champion again.
Right. We better move on from Barcelona. Congratulations for winning the league. We will sort of rattle through everyone else. I'm always conscious that people don't listen to the end. We will do...
Should we leave Real Madrid to the end now?
Force everyone to
sandwich,
listen.
Sandwich Mallorca, Cadiz. Let's go Mallorca, Cadiz. We can do those games, some of those, quite quick, can't we?
Go on then, do Mallorca.
1-0. 1-0. Cadiz still suffering. It was an even game. Scruffy passages of play during this match, and that's Mallorca well and truly safe now. They have been for a while, but Cadiz is a
big trouble, aren't they?
In trouble, yeah.
I learned something I've been meaning to look up for ages about the offside law, and I didn't know. The offside, the Lee Kang-in offside, right at the end, and it looks like he's in his own half, but they give it offside, and it's because he's leaning over the halfway line.
Yeah.
And so some of him is offside. And so,
the part that can participate in the game legally is deemed to be offside.
Yeah. I wasn't sure if you were onside, if some of you were the other side of the line, which brings us to, let's do Atleti and the throw, because we a bit of actual production got into the show where we looked it up. And you look at the steal; it's a valid throw. I'm in a minority, but I think I've convinced you, Terry. I've now that it's a valid throw. So I'll screenshot this for patrons. That basically the law. I can't see it. So we better not show it because it's La Liga footage. But basically, so the law is that the law is basically that as long as some part of you is over the line. Oh, I'll stop sharing. That's Frankie. I think Frank de Jong's list of trophies. I was just double checking that he did win the Eredivisie.
You're lucky it was that, John.
Yes. Randomly sharing stuff off your computer always dangerous. Frank de Jong's Wikipedia page. But basically, as long as some of your foot is on the line, because you thought it was behind the line, didn't you? That was the everything you've been taught and all.
Always thought that, and I've never heard anyone say any different. Mm. And listen, the laws of the game have changed so much, but I still thought that applied. I still thought that was the law. I didn't know it. I don't know if it's been changed. I can remember, being one of the fundamental laws of the game as a kid. Behind the line. So when I saw that throwing, I thought, that's a foul throw. It's like, so what we're saying is you could have a stride, but your back foot could be on the line. Is that
No. So both feet. It's his front foot. His back foot's well behind the line, isn't it? It's his front foot.
Yeah.
And the heel of his front foot is on the line. So you're only really nicking two 2 inches. How thick's the line?
Yeah.
3 inches, isn't it? So you're only nicking 2 inches. And then don't defend the throw properly from, you know what I mean? Yeah. To be fair, but there'd be fans moaning about it. They didn't want to, well, all that. Defend the throw, honestly.
Yeah, Atleti didn't complain about the throw during the game.
Yeah, precisely.
They didn't know it was a possible infringement. Yeah. They didn't complain about that. They had every right to complain about the non-penalty given, though.
Right, yes.
Fair on Jimenez. He comes out and punches him full in the face, misses the ball, both hands punch him in the face, and then he lands with his studs on his face as well when he's on the floor. And I think there's two penalties there, not just the one. There's actually two. And the ref, they didn't give it. So that was the complaint I would have if I was an Atleti supporter and player in Simeone. But Atleti didn't deserve anything in that game. Mm. It's dreadful. It brought back the performances from the first half of the season. They're playing the worst team in the league. They didn't create many chances. It was lackluster. It was awful. And that's a huge surprise to Elche. Going into the game last night, you're looking and thinking, well, Atleti will win, so it still needs this to happen for Barcelona to win the league. So it was a huge surprise. And let's go. Just got themselves into second place and blew it with a poor performance and a surprise defeat at Elche, which takes them up to 19 points.
Hey. let's talk about Real Madrid. They beat Getafe Saturday night. It wasn't much of a, Saturday night game. You're in between the two Man City games.
I still preferred it over the Eurovision, I have to be honest. but it was a hard watch. And it was a training game.
Yeah.
Players playing that don't normally play. There are one or two that still didn't play. And you're thinking they must have got the message by now that, I mean, Hazard gets a game. I find it quite sad, to be honest. I have no close relationship with Eden Hazard, and Spurs fan. He was ex-Chelsea, but I did enjoy watching him play in the Premier League. I cannot for one moment believe that he's absolutely useless now. And I can't believe, the only thing he's hanging on is that there's a change of manager and the new manager comes in and gives them a chance, because 60 minutes at the weekend when you barely played all season, at that age, you need a run of games. Yeah. You know, even if it's 20 minutes for, you know, a month coming off the bench and getting used to the pace of the game. So he's on a hiding to nothing. Hatafe, it's more about Hatafe this game. Gene playing in midfield, no Enizunal. I thought they lacked any courage or conviction and looked to be quite content with a one-goal defeat. Never really got ahead of steam up to try and get themselves back in the game. And they were lovely opponents for Real Madrid in between the two Man City games, and not what I expected from Hatafe. Yeah. So whether they think the next game is more winnable, blah, blah, blah. But this was an opportunity to at least get a point by being a bit more active than they were in this match.
Let's have a quick summary of the Champions League tie, where it stands. We did do this for Patreons on Friday as we look back after that. So they got the 1-1 draw with City. City played... They did rest a couple at the weekend. De Bruyne didn't play at all. They didn't, Grealish came to the bench and whatever, as they effectively have clinched the Premier League title. I enjoyed the game. It was cagey, but they're so good that you still produced a good game, the two teams. City, are City favourites with the home advantage, or are you saying it's close to call?
Close to call still. Mm. Yeah, and the game surprised me. Tactically, it was a little bit more apprehensive from the home team, Real Madrid. They played a 4-1-4-1 formation for the most of the first half. I was surprised how much possession they allowed Manchester City. And yet they still looked threatening on the counter-attack. Is it going to be the same setup? Probably, for Ancelotti in the second leg. I think he'll try and keep things nice and solid at the back, try and stop Erling Haaland again. Mm-hmm. I think he's already said Rüdiger plays.
Yeah.
So it'd be interesting the rest of the makeup of the rest of the back four. Who plays alongside him, who plays left back, that sort of thing. Camavinga picked up a knock towards the end of the game against Hatafe. But I think we're going to see a similar setup and Real Madrid to play on the break. I have this sneaky feeling that the Real Madrid are going to do it. And I know we see Man City beating everybody at the moment. And I just wonder sometimes whether we've got the two elements here. Real Madrid, this is their competition. And Manchester City keep finding ways not to win it. And while we're all looking at the strength of probably the best version of a Manchester City we've seen, then I just wonder again if it's going to be that narrative, it's the story is going to be how Real Madrid got through in this one.
Mm.
And now face probably Inter Milan in the final. And, Manchester City are knocking everybody over, left, right and centre. Haaland is scoring against everybody. He didn't score against Real Madrid. I could be wrong. Man City could turn on the stove and be, too much for Real Madrid. But I just had this sneaky feeling that Real Madrid are going to get through again. Same as Sevilla in the Europa League. And I joked months ago that it was going to be a Spanish Super Cup final. And I'm still in there fighting.
Yeah, they were disappointed to concede that goal against Juve, weren't they? They looked really good. And then, obviously, 3-0. So he changed. It wasn't a totally weakened team, was it, against Valladolid?
He hasn't got the option at the moment. A lot of players are missing.
Yeah.
Suspended, injured, stuff like that. A lot of players are missing. So he hasn't got he can't rotate it completely.
Yeah.
But some of the important players were rested. Rakitic started again. So what they've done, they're on the verge of seventh. For the conference league.
Yeah.
And it's in the middle of... So he took over in a relegation battle. He's kept them in Europe, beat Man United. They're now playing Juventus in the semi-final. They're an excellent result away from home. They're unlucky not to have held on for the 1-0 victory. And now suddenly find themselves in with a chance of finishing in a European spot in their league position. So incredible turnaround for Sevilla. 47 points now. And they're in that little group that, with Girona and one or two others, Athletic Club, that have got a chance also sooner of finishing seventh and getting in European football again. So, or the alternative is win the Europa League and get the Champions League. It's where they should be, though.
Yeah. So it was crucial, though, wasn't it? Because Valladolid got the ball
goal.
In the back of the net right on, it was right on the half-time whistle, wasn't it? So it was a crucial thing. But then Sevilla... After that, Valladolid weren't good, were they? I mean,
no, that, no, that was, I mean, it's literally half time. Escudero's a corner, it's defended, it's partially cleared to someone who's about 25 meters outside of goal. But you can see Escudero, there's only one thing he's going to do. He's aware that the half time whistle is due, not in that second, but he thinks, I'm not going to control this and pass it out wide and we try and get the ball in the box again. I'm just going to hammer it. And he slams it home 25 metres and the referee literally blows the whistle at exactly the same time he has the shot. It, the referee's whistle had no impact on the goal.
It was
going in. There was Dimitrovic wasn't going to make the save. It, not as if the Sevilla players heard the whistle and stopped and didn't close him down. That Dimitrovic didn't make a 100% effort to save it. So it was a genuine goal. But literally, as Escudero hits it, it's the whistle was just a split second before, and they went berserk. Actually, they didn't handle it that well. The manager Pezzolano was all over the place. He was on the pitch. He was trying to protect his players from getting at the referee, but all he was doing was giving himself room to get at the referee.
They lost
their heads. There was too many people on the pitch, and it was chaotic. And then they come out for the second half in with fury. And it reflected in their performance. Ref and me gets the goal after 5 minutes in the second half. And it was after that, they were really poor, Valladolid. And Sevilla didn't have to work too hard to get the last two goals from Papu Gomez and Tecatito. Two players have been out, injured, for quite long periods. I don't think Tecatito's eligible for the Europa League. Him and Pape Gay, I think, are the ones that had to be left out of the squad. So, hence the reason they both got playing time in this match. So it's an excellent result for Sevilla. Crushing blow for Valladolid because of the goal, because of the performance in the second half, the result. And it still leaves them in trouble, to be honest. Sevilla at home for a relegation-threatened team at this stage of the season, in between the Juventus game, should have been a good fixture. But it wasn't for Valladolid.
But Valencia, massive result, wasn't it, to win away to Celta Vigo late. So Kluivert scored early. He was back fit again, and then Alberto Mari, the young, he replaced Kluivert, actually, didn't he? Came on for him late in the game and scored right at the death after Severovic's goal. So it probably dragged Celta back into it. We've been unsure as to whether to count Celta in the relegation battle or not, but with 39 points, really 5 points above with four games to play, should be okay, but it's not guaranteed, is it?
No, to the extent now I've written down their games. So they wasn't in that list of teams that I was writing down their fixtures, this fixture. And also, I think, if Celta, how hard is their Athletic away? Tough game. Yeah. Girona at home, there'll be goals scored. Either way, Girona are flying. Cadiz away. By that time, that might be a... There's a little controversy over these finals that we keep describing these games. Not us, but around the place. So this is a final, and these are not finals. They're six-pointers. They can do you damage. A final is a... There's always another game. It's, I guess we could describe one as a final if it was two relegation-threatened teams on the last day of the season playing each other, and the winner stays up, loser goes down. Then that could be described somewhat like a final, but these are not finals. But Cadiz away and then Barcelona at home, which we don't know. When teams play Barcelona, Real Madrid, Atletico Madrid, we don't know what state they're going to be in, how serious they're taking it. Barcelona might have the incentive of various records in not conceding goals. So Celta, no, it's feasible. They don't get another point.
Yeah.
And is 39 going to be enough?
Yeah, but it's touch and go, isn't it? Yeah,
it is touch and go, and it would be a big story because I ticked them off 4 weeks ago and said, no, they're safe now. They're playing well. Carvajal's got them. They look a good team now. And then that degree of panic sets in, doesn't it? We think, oh, God, no. Quick, we need this, we need that. And it sometimes doesn't work well when that happens.
Right.
Valencia, though.
Yes, go on.
Baraka keeps throwing in these youngsters, and that takes them to do that. Is it Javi Guerrero the week before in the last game against Valladolid with a late winner or a recent game, and now Alberto Mari, a 21-year-old, we haven't seen too much of. He comes on and scores a fine header. Their courage was in their performance as well. They weren't just happy with the point. They're under pressure in the second half, but they had the courage to go for the win, go for the 3 points, and to keep putting on the young players. I mean, we were saying it might be an issue, these young players at Valencia, how young the squad is to deal with relegation battle. And even younger players and more inexperienced players are being thrown into the action, and they're coming up trumps. So if Valencia survive, and I hope they do, then with these young players under Ruben Baraka, we might see a more vibrant Valencia next season.
Yeah, but we don't know, do we? Because it's a shambles,
no.
A chaotic club.
Yeah.
Battle for the top, for fourth place. Let's do two games together. Real Sociedad 2, Girona 2. I mean, Girona have been, they're not in this battle, but they have been a joy, haven't they? And they just won't be beaten. Terrific character. So 2-2 after Real Sociedad started really well. And same weekend, then Villarreal got a 5-1 against Athletic. And it was a ragged old performance from Athletic, wasn't it? But
in at both ends of the pitch as well, wasn't it? They had chances. So it's 5-1. I mean, you can make a case here that Athletic could have scored 3 or 4 themselves. They had problems beating the offside trap. They were making the runs were too early, and Nico Williams and Yaki Williams are too quick. You don't have to pinch a yard against Aissa Mendy. You can give him 2 or 3 yards. Make sure you're onside. So that was the problems at one end of the pitch. And defensively, they were all over the place for a change. But the VRL just cracked into the real top gear, good form. Alex Baena was immaculate in this game. And Nico Jackson was just enhancing his reputation. No one knows what he failed the medical on the injury that stopped the transfer to Bournemouth. And there's no evidence, is there, that he's got an injury issue. Whether it was a temporary injury and Bournemouth couldn't risk signing a player that might not be involved in their relegation battle for a month or two, that might have been the issue, but he certainly looks fit and healthy to me. He looks a real threat. And it was certainly the benefit of Villarreal that he didn't leave the club. So Villarreal playing really well. But even the goal, the own goal from Paredes from Athletic, that summed them up, their performance, didn't it? It wasn't one of those where you think, oh, poor defender, he had no choice. He had to get something on it. Yeah, he did, but it was coming to him slowly. And you could have done a lot of other things other than just past your own goalkeeper.
Swat it past the keeper, yeah.
Exactly. So, that was a ragged performance. Real Sociedad, 2-0 up, cruising. And I don't want to be too critical. They still kept attacking, still kept looking to score more goals. But Girona, I have to give them the credit. They never know when they're beaten. They're very enthusiastic in getting players into attacking positions. And they've been brilliant. You kind of forget that they're a newly promoted team. It's 48 points. And they're challenging for the 7th place spot and the place in the Conference League. So, brilliant season from Girona. And I think Real Sociedad will still be right for top four.
And how many times do we get to this point of the week where Osasuna is the last team that we discuss? I do apologise to the Ipswich Rojillo, who is one of our Patreons. We're just, I don't know, because they were safe, but, and you're always very nice about them. But here we are, we're doing Osasuna last. And a good win for them against Almeria. Setback for Almeria, who have been terrible away from home. I'll share the table, actually, just for while we have a rattle through it at the end.
Oh, Osasuna, a really, really good job, because it was a performance that came on the back of losing the Copa del Rey. They could be excused for knocking off, but they didn't. And in this game, it was at least a 3-0. They were much better than Almeria. Almeria's was a 92nd minute goal consolation from Lazaro, but Budimir has suddenly found some form in the back end of the season. Abde is such an interesting player to watch. I don't know what's going to happen with his future at Osasuna next season. And Moy Gomez came off the bench to score the third, but they were terrific. And they're in the race so they've switched themselves back on. They're in the race for the 7th place spot. But the interesting thing was all the players that I moaned about playing out of position last week started in their right positions this week. So Peña was at right back, Moncayola was back in midfield, Moy Gomez was on the bench but came on and played in his normal role. So that was kind of weird. I don't want to be too critical of Arrasati because they put up a good display in the final. But I thought at some stage during that he could have put all 3 players back in their positions and they may, you know, it's in hindsight, they might have had a better chance of at least taking Real Madrid to extra time. So, yeah, that'd be strange how he did that, but normal service resumed back at Osasuna and continue on with a fine season.
Yeah, the battle for seventh, as a trademark, is fascinating, isn't it? Betis play tonight, so they should. There's a 4-point gap. It's not 4 points, isn't enough as a gap now at this stage of the season. 4 games to play. Wow. If you have a couple of bad games, that's gone, isn't it?
Yeah, and you, I think you still want to be in the Europa League, don't you? As opposed to the Conference League, you still want to be in that. And Betis having been at home to Rayo on Monday night, tricky game.
Yeah,
I'm sure they've got some players suspended because they always do. It's going to be tight. I mean, they've got to. Suddenly, they become 10 points away from Real Sociedad. Literally 3 weeks ago, we were saying Betis and Real Sociedad were neck and neck, and who was going to get fourth?
Yeah.
And that's changed drastically. So yeah, Betis need to win against Rayo, and other than that, they're going to be dragged in with, as you said, the 4-point gap, and it. There's a risk then of losing out altogether with the severe derby next week.
Yes, it's Sunday night, I think it is, isn't it? Yeah.
Yes.
So Betis have got 52 game to play tonight. Girona 48, Athletic 47, Osasuna 47, Sevilla 47, Rayo Vallecano play tonight, of course, 46. And even stick Mallorca in there, 44. If they win their games to the end of the season, might sneak into Europe, which would be a tremendous effort on their part. And the relegation battle, Elche are down, but do have 19 points now. Espanyol 31, 4 games to play. Yeah. And then Getafe 34, Valladolid 35, Cadiz 35, Almeria 36, Valencia 37, Celta Vigo 39. And then is the big gap then, and everyone above that is safe. So, that's where we stand. It's exciting. More games to come. We'll be back with another podcast next week. If you want to be a Patreon, we're patreon.com/ltel, and we're back with more Patreon stuff, and we'll see you all for another podcast next week. So we'll see you then.